What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest, Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is Tennessee congressional candidate Chas Mulder, a really top-notch challenger. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. And we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You also can get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. So tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Please check out the links to our sponsors, Super Power and HERS WL, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors because it really helps make this podcast happen. James, you know, the big Texas primary results were near perfect for Democrats. Predictably, Attorney General Ken Paxton, with Trump's support, blew by incumbent John Cornyn, an establishment Republican who shamefully tried to pander to Trump unsuccessfully. Paxton, who has been criminally indicted, impeached by the Republican House there, 8 of his attorney general aides accused him of bribery. He is a serial adulterer favored by the religious right. This is the weakest Senate or gubernatorial candidate Republicans have put up in over 30 years. It gives Democrat James Tallarico a chance. It's still Texas, but a chance. And in the Democratic congressional primaries, everything worked out. Aging Al Green, an embarrassment to his party in the House, was defeated, as was Maureen Galindo, who had made a number of anti-Jewish statements, and Republicans and conservatives were hoping she would win a Democratic primary so they could paint her as the face of the party. She got soundly defeated. And Colin Allred, who was a mediocre Senate candidate but a good House member, reclaimed his old seat. Now it's up to Allred and Tallarico to bury their political hatchet for the general election. And Republicans nominated a few other really far-right haters. So it was a rare good night for the D's in Texas.
Okay, so if you look a little deeper, it's actually a little bit better than maybe we even looked at the headline numbers. I mean, of course, the big headline number is Cornyn spent $90 million, the most ever spent on a primary in U.S. history. Now, it's Texas, but still in all, it's an all-time record.
Right.
And the turnout was less than impressive. It was about 1.4 million. With all that money and all of that interest, that says something. And, you know, we've reported on this, and I think it's a great untold story, is how jacked up black turnout is in the few cases we've had, particularly Georgia and Louisiana, post-college. So I think that internal indicators here that are a lot better. And actually, you touched on something that I think every Democrat that, like us, that wants to win elections was worried about, that congressional primary. That not only did the person going to win, they won like
60-39,
38 or something like that. And it was, it was not close. So And I think that Tallarico has better than a shot. And the thing that impressed me the most was his immediate comeback to, they're trying to, Trump is saying, he's a vegan. And he said, look, I've been eating brisket since before Ken Paxton was first indicted. Well, that is very encouraging, I thought. Very, right. Very encouraging.
Yeah, it sure is. I think Tallarico has to be smart and he has to be aggressive. As you just suggested, the GOP already aired an ad accusing him of saying all kinds of weird things.
Some like of it is true.
Yeah, but he said there's six genders. Well, I don't know whether he said it or not, but if he said it, God damn it, he better walk it back right now or explain it. But most importantly, I think, James, what he has to do is say, hey, I may have said some dumb things, but Ken Paxton has committed dumb, corrupt acts that hurt Texas citizens. And his source material is rich, that Paxton is a liar, a crook, unfit for office, all that from Republicans. If he stays on the offensive and Hispanic and Black voters are energized, I may not be quite as, I think Tallarico has a 50-50 shot to be the first Democratic senator elected since Lloyd Benson.
We can agree.
Yeah.
It's a pure toss-up.
Right. And Texas hadn't elected a Democratic senator, James, I think, since Lloyd Benson, in 1988?
So if you took your class at Penn, you took your brightest student a year ago, and you said, write me 500 words on how a Democrat could win Texas. That bright student would say, well, you'd have to have some unique circumstances. First, you would have to have a bruising, expensive, negative, drawn-out Republican primary. Check. It would need a Democrat who would defeat a urban progressive in a Democratic primary to at least give a patina of moderation. Check.
Right.
You would need to have a political climate that would... Well, Democrats would be consistently overperforming. Check. You would have to raise an inordinate amount of money for a Texas Democrat because they have no power. Check. In other words, everything that you would say in a lab that had to happen to get this thing to the point that here we are, almost in, at post-Memorial Day saying it's a 50-50 race. Everything that had to happen so far has happened. Okay, we got a ways to go here, but the news just couldn't be any better in terms of how this was setting up.
You're right. And the other thing is national Republicans are going to have to spend, $250 million maybe. But that is money. I know they've got all kinds of money. They are wealth. They've got very deep pockets, but that's still money. That's not going to go, some of that at least, is not going to go to Iowa, is not going to go to Ohio, is not going to go to Maine, is not going to go to Alaska. They're going to have to spend a fortune because, among other things, Paxton can't raise money. And Tallarico can. So the Republicans are going to... Go ahead.
He had the biggest fundraising quarter in history, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he said he raised the first hour after the results came in last night. Tallarico raised $600,000 in an hour. James, you better get back in the business.
Yeah, I'll be 82 in October. Who says I can't come out of retirement? I know that we're about having a fundraiser in New Orleans for him. And remember, our mayor would be a big boon to Tallarico because she's actually maybe only mayor outside of Texas actually born in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, no. Yeah. I think several of those congressional races look a lot better now. Again, I think you mentioned the Black turnout, the Hispanic turnout. It could really make a huge...
That Al Green getting beat was good.
It was so good. He was too old, over the hill, flaky, embarrassing. So every primary turned out the way that I thought was best. I thought that Colin Allred is a good House member. He was not a good candidate. I was glad he won.
I was glad Carl won. I didn't like him getting in the middle of the Democratic primary.
Yeah, but he can make amends now. James, turning to another subject, we talked about all the problems the Republicans had. The supposedly much-awaited Democratic autopsy on 2024 came out. To call it a total dud would be to elevate it. It would avoid it. It didn't mention Biden's age. It didn't mention Gaza. It didn't mention Kamala Harris's campaign problems. You know, earlier I read a piece on some secondary issues like digital ad placement that may add some values. But I had two overarching thoughts. See what you think. Number one, why did the Democrats lose in 2024? I don't think it's complicated. They lost because Joe Biden waited a year too long to get out, and Kamala Harris was not a good candidate, period.
I completely agree with you. If there's one fact about the 2024 election that you need to autopsy above all, and it's this. From Labor Day to Election Day, the Harris campaign had available and spent $2 billion. I don't think we got a vote on Election Day we weren't going to get on Labor Day anyway. Why wouldn't you want to know, okay, where did money go? We're not saying that somebody skimmed out. I don't want to start with that shit. I'm not saying by design, but clearly this was the most ineffective $2 billion ever spent. Yeah. Well, how was it allocated? Why didn't it do any good? Is there a way that we could have done it better? There has to be. And, you know, Al, when an airplane crashes, the last thing anybody says, well, we just need to look ahead. We don't need to look back. No, actually, exactly. you want to find out. Was it the landing gear? Was it the air traffic control? Was it the weather? Was it terrorism? Was it run out of gas? I don't know. But the last thing you want to do is say, well, there's nothing to see here, folks. Let's go on. And it's idiotic. First of all, you're right. The thing didn't address this or that. It was some guy that they got to do it, and then they weren't going to release it, then they were going to release it. It was a prime example of just staggering Washington Democratic call it incompetence gives it too much of a word. And I don't know if there's anything to do about it, can be done about it, or should be done about it.
Well, I read people saying, well, we ought to replace Ken Martin. You know, what good would that do? I mean, the Democratic National Committee is in dreadful shape. It is it's not respected by at least most elected members of the party. And I think the party just moves on knowing that they set the schedule for primaries and hopefully can raise a little bit of money, although that's really, really hard. And they're largely irrelevant.
Well, my idea for the Democratic National Committee, because he doesn't want to do it, if I could pick a DNC chairman, I would say we ought to put Paul McGowan, because he's great on TV. He's great with fundraisers. He would signal something new, and you can hire somebody to run the goddamn thing.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something, James. You know, you can do that. You better watch out for Diane Bogalis. She may come after you.
And Paul's like, don't say that. But that kind of person, you know, that is a good public face. But right now, because I'm out raising money, but all the time. I'm here in Manhattan. These donors are not going to give any money to them.
Right.
They're just not.
Right. No, I mean, I agree.
They're not livid or anything like that. I'm not giving these people any money. I don't have anything against Ken Martin. I think he got an impossible job, and he, like most of us, can't do an impossible job. But if they want to get a fresh start here or signal something, or maybe the idea of just let them sit there and be fucking irrelevant. Maybe that's the best thing to do. I could be convinced of that also.
Yeah. James, let me give you one more issue here, which sure. I think is really a big one, and that is the Alabama gerrymandering. A three-judge panel. Listen, two of those judges were appointed by Trump. A three-judge panel ruled that the Republicans' effort after the Voting Rights Act was gutted to redraw a map was, and I'm quoting these Republican judges, was, quote, tainted by intentional race-based discrimination, end quote, against blacks. Alabama is immediately appealing this to the U.S. Supreme Court, which may put even those Republicans on the spot. This would be an absolute outrage if allowed to be upheld.
You know, contrast that was South Carolina.
Yeah.
I think that the racism, you know, a lot, I have this theory that 20% of the Southern Republicans are really not Republicans. The Republicans are convenience. You could have said that of the Democrats in the 70s, I guess.
Yeah.
And my new thing, and I've talked about it on the show before, and I'm going to talk about it again, what Democrats need to do is go after party switches.
Right.
But you can't tell me in that South Carolina legislature, I know our county commissioners or sheriffs, that you couldn't go in and just start poaching and recruiting. In Louisiana, if we actually had, and Jamie Davis is probably going to be our nominee. He's a good guy. He's a black farmer from Tensaw Parish, Louisiana Delta. But if we had the DA of Shreveport or something like that, who switched and gave him the keys to the car, we're not going to win it. But that Senate race, the Democrats are not going to lose it by double digits. But I'm just one example. I don't know something about Mississippi. I think we can win. But the road back for the Democrats in not Georgia or North Carolina, but that's not an issue, but the Alabama, Tennessee's, Arkansas, Louisiana's of the world, we got to go poke some Republican office holders and run them for office as Democrats. I really believe that.
Because over the long run, you have to compete in some of those states. It's true today. It'll be even more true after the 2030 census.
You're right. And you got to compete because you just, what happens to us in Louisiana, just you look around, there's nobody left.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we covered a lot of territory because there's a lot of territory out there today.
What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest, Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Hey, James, our guest is Chas Mulder, who's the mayor of Columbia, Tennessee, but he's also running as a Democrat in the 5th Congressional District. There are other candidates, but the DCCC and others say it's Mulder will be the nominee. It's a very tough district. James, if you're right and it's going to be a wave election, then look for the Mulders of the world to win. That's what this election is all about. Mr. Mayor, we're pleased to have you. You were running in a district that your opponent, Andy Inglis, carried by, I think, 17 points. They then redistricted it because they're kind of afraid of facing you. And it's a district now that Trump would have won by about 23. That makes it awful uphill, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I got to tell the Nashville voter that we succeeded in getting rid of Andy Ogles because they redrew the maps. And so now we're going to go to Memphis and campaign in Memphis and get rid of Andy Ogles there. And how many Democrats get to say that they've run in Nashville and Memphis in the same year are still undefeated? We can. And it's because we have a message that's really resonating. Al, we're talking about really just the kitchen table issues, issues that Democrats have owned in the past. And we're going to reclaim that in this cycle. Being a small town mayor, I see that firsthand. I have a front row seat to the actual problems, and people are ready for a leader who will go fight for them with those problems.
Congressman Ogle would not make the cast of the Incorruptibles. He's under criminal investigation for campaign finance laws, or he was. He lied about his resume. There's lots of smoke. The investigation, I think, was halted by this Justice Department. But I guess the question is, when we look at Washington, do people care anymore about corruption?
They do now. They care that the rules of the game have been changed after the game had already begun. I mean, I have three kids. I try to teach them to play by the rules and to do the right thing. Their state legislature, after the rules had already been set, the maps had already been drawn, they changed the rules. They moved the goalposts. These are things that we don't want our kids to do, much less our elected officials. And so that's really allowed people to sort of open their eyes to what's going on, to the bigger picture. To your point, Andy Ogles is an embarrassment of riches. People want a congressman that they can believe in and trust. And Andy Ogles is not those two things.
Yeah, it was quite controversial that this Justice Department dropped it. Imagine this Justice Department dropping a case against a Republican. You know the Trump playbook, the GOP playbook. They're going to focus, they're going to accuse you of being a woke, out-of-touch elitist, because that's what they do. So tell us a little bit more about your background. You know, are you a hunter? Do you go to church? All that kind of stuff.
I go to the same church today that I grew up in. I'm raising my kids in the same pew, the same church in downtown Columbia, small town just outside of Nashville. I have a farm in Hickman County, which is in this sprawling 17-county district where I just got a turkey for the season, where I was fishing on the Duck River on Saturday. This is an area that I know very well. Now, I don't want to let the legislature know too soon about how well I connect with this district, because they're liable to call another special session to further protect Andy Ogles. But the reality is I went to law school in Memphis. Memphis is now in my district. My wife is from rural West Tennessee. Her dad served in the state legislature for 25 years. That's in the district. And we've been successful in small town Columbia as a mayor. We've brought people together and we've focused on the issues that matter. I think Democrats have not done a good job at that in the South. But I think that we're seeing that if we do a good job of that, if we have the right candidates in the right district at the right time, that trifecta will take us to victory. And I happen to believe we have that in the fifth, no matter what map they may draw. 17 counties are in the district now, and we're working hard in all 17, rural and urban alike.
We know the cost of living is a huge issue in Tennessee as elsewhere. What are your voters saying about the Iran war?
Well, they're saying, why isn't Andy Ogles at least explaining to us what's going on? Why isn't Andy Ogles coming out into the district to talk about a war that is costing us billions of dollars abroad when we have gas that's over $4.25 a gallon? We have 10,000 people that commute to Nashville from the city that I am the mayor of that are having to fill up their gas tanks and are now seeing things stretched way too thin. Meanwhile, Andy Ogles is making national headlines on Twitter, not talking about the issues here that matter at home.
James.
So let's talk a little bit about your district. First of all, what is the partisan lean, the Cook PVI of your district right now?
+7 to 9, somewhere okay. There. We'll call it 7.
That's call out the sweet spot. Okay, let's talk about your district. Are you more middle Western Tennessee?
Well, I am the mayor of a community that's 40 miles south of Nashville,
right.
James.
Okay.
So I'm a middle Tennessee guy, but I've lived right. In Memphis. And
so it was Buford Parser in your district?
No, sir. That's McNary County, and that's in the new 8th district.
That's in the new, okay. So Shiloh is in your district or not?
That's correct. That's, yes.
Shiloh is in, okay. So I just want people to get a visual here. And how much of Davidson County, which is Nashville, do you have?
They've taken all of Davidson County out from us because they knew that we were winning in Nashville.
Right, right.
And they've given us Memphis.
All right. So this is something I'm very big on. I want the Democratic Party to give people like you and our mutual friend, Governor Beshear, but everywhere, a brand to run on and not a brand to run from. Okay. And what are you saying when you go and you do a town hall and people say, are you part of the Democrat? You know, they don't get us. They don't understand us. How do you deal with that just standard observation that's so prevalent and so much of rural and small town America?
Well, I think they see me as a mayor who's been elected in a community that Donald Trump won with 44% of the vote. How does a guy like me, James, get elected to the mayor's position in a community that votes for Donald Trump by 44 percentage points? It's because...
So he won, wait a minute, let me back this up because I want people to get this straight. The town in Tennessee, Columbia, Tennessee, that you're the mayor of, Trump won that by how much?
44 percentage points.
Okay. That's the kind of differentials that we're looking at.
And I beat the two-term incumbent Republican mayor 60% to 40% and was reelected by the similar margins against the local Republican Party chair for our county in Columbia.
Wow. Wow.
And it's because we talk about the issues that resonate. I mean, we're not focused on issues that drive us apart. Everybody, no matter if they redraw the maps or not, are Tennesseans, and they're paying the same for gas. They're not having healthcare access. Their communities aren't as safe as they want them to be. And their congressman's focused on making national headlines for the wrong reasons instead of local headlines for the right reason. And we're different in that regard. And we're not running away from anything. We're leaning into the fact that I'm for anybody that wants to play by the rules and make a fair wage and do the right thing. And I want to bring people together, not drive them apart. Potholes don't have partisan labels, James, you know that. And as mayor, you solve problems. And people want problem solvers.
But I know that. We finally got a good mayor in New Orleans. And I can't tell you how exactly. You know, a mayor, I think, has more effect on your day-to-day life than a governor or a senator or anybody else.
Absolutely. You know,
It's really critical, and but the electoral achievements you have compared to what they should be are really really important here. When you're asked again, does Ogles do any town halls? Or do y'all do any debates? Or does he have any kind of voter engagement or outreach? Or what's going on there?
Zero. I would love to debate him. He will not.
He won't debate you. Does he have town halls? Does he ask that much?
You have to sign up in advance and go through a screening in order to go to his town halls.
So you just can't show up and say, Congressman Ogles, I want to know why you voted again. So he's running a very protective campaign. And you will talk to anybody at any time under any circumstances.
We've had living room conversations since the day we announced. James talked to thousands of voters. The only difference is now we're traveling to Memphis instead of traveling to Nashville.
Well, I can't tell you how impressed I am. And anytime you want to use my name or send out a fundraising field, just sign the shit, man. Go ahead. I think you can do this. I really do.
I'll do that. ChadBuller.com is our website. And James, if you liked what you see, let the governor of Kentucky know that as well.
I'll let him know.
Let me try a couple. Tell us a little bit more about Andy Ogles. Tell us a little bit more about, I saw where he said he sponsored an amendment for Trump to run for a third term. But that's probably the least of his offenses. Tell us what the problems are with
Andy Ogles is someone that I call an embarrassment of riches. He is exactly what you don't want in a congressman. He's been under federal investigation his entire federal career. He's lied about his resume, both in his education and his employment. My biggest problem, Alan, is that he stole funds from a children's memorial garden and never accounted for them, never told the people what he did with the money. And those are just three to begin with. His lawyer that he's hired is, in fact, someone who has been under investigation and charged with swindling money to go buy a new yacht. So he surrounds himself with people that are not doing the right thing that I try to teach my three children, or when I go into schools across my hometown where I'm mayor and talk to them about wanting to do the right thing and play by the rules. He's the opposite of that. And I think we've found this moment in time in Tennessee where we have an incredibly unqualified and not good congressman. And we have a small town mayor who is ready to make a run for Congress because he knows that it's worth it, not just for his generation, but for the future generations as well.
Well, your state used to have some great politicians. I wouldn't say it does anymore, but when the days of Al Gore and Howard Baker and Bill Brock and Jim Sasser and a number of members of the House. So, you know, you would, you know, it's kind of hurting right now.
I'll give you a quick little Tennessee history lesson. I'm currently reading Lamar Alexander's new book, which is a pretty good book. You should both read it. I think you would like it. But I interned in college for Fred Thompson. Bob Corker was the one that I was in the room when he was speaking, and someone asked him what his favorite job was. And he said his favorite job he's ever had was being the mayor of his hometown. That's where the light bulb went off for me that doing that would be a great job. It has been. And when I speak on that stump, like James was asking in the living rooms, I quote Howard Baker, who is someone that used to say the other side may be right. And right now in Washington, we have no compromise. I told you my name is one of that came from compromise from my parents that I'm paying for today when folks don't know how to pronounce it. But Howard Baker, Al Gore, Kefauver, we had some statesmen from Tennessee. Now we have people that are embarrassing us instead of making us proud. And I'm ready to change that.
Well, Howard Baker, it was only with Howard Baker's support, the Panama Canal Treaties was passed almost 50 years ago. It was opposed 3-1 by Republicans, and he was running for president. I mean, that's called statesmanship. He was incredible. Final question for me. Ogus is obviously trying to cling to Donald Trump. I mean, he does everything that Trump asks him to do. Is Trump still as popular down there as he was?
You know, what I do know is Andy Ogles is not, nor is Andy Ogles' policies that he supports. The big, beautiful bill that's going to take away hundreds of billions of dollars from Medicaid are not going to be helpful to his district. Adding $3 trillion to the deficit are not going to be helpful. So I don't know about who's popular, who's not popular, but what I know is not popular are the issues and policies that Andy Ogles supports. And that's what we're hearing on a daily basis as we go throughout the trail. Just Friday night, I was at a baseball game, had a guy, about 45-year-old male, came up to me and said, Mulder, you're going to be the first Democrat I ever vote for. And when I hear that, I know that that's giving validation that our message of reason and common sense and doing the right thing and supporting the little guy is really resonating all across Tennessee, no matter the lines that they may draw in the state legislature.
James?
First of all, when you see Senator Corker, maybe it was a little bit before the pandemic, and I saw him at National Airport. He comes up and he says, James, he knows not to call me Jim, and he says, Bob Corker. I said, oh, Senator Corker, weren't you the first guy to wire Chattanooga, the first completely wired? And I had to come back in 15 minutes, man. He was so excited that I asked him about being mayor of Chattanooga, and it being the first city, I think I'm right on this, that had 100% internet connection.
That's right, the gig city.
And that's also, I don't know if you want to emphasize this, in Tennessee was the great moment when Grant asked Rawlins, who ordered those troops up Missionary Ridge? He said, nobody, General. They just went. And that's what I'm telling Democrats. Just go. Don't wait on order some headquarters. Don't wait on the DNC. Just go. Organize, get together, and support our people. But this is great. And I just want to give you one, because I have to do this because I'm an old political consultant. In fact, somebody last night came to me, and is that guy introduced his son, and he was at Brown, and he wants to be in politics. What should he study? And I said, easy, the Bible. Every story is contained therein, okay? And the big thing, and I think this applies to Ogles, is he betrayed you. Betrayal is a huge, huge theme, biblical theme. And betrayal, it doesn't blame you. You thought that he would go there and do this. I don't blame you. But instead of, he did that. And
I love that.
In the narrative, okay? In the narrative, many times that we put our faith in somebody, I can understand that when you saw things, you wanted change, but you didn't want corruption. You voted for change. They're two different things. So whatever you want. But use the biblical theme that is so dominant, because it's so dominant in human nature, by the way, betrayal. You are betrayed, not your fault. That's my.
Our community's been betrayed. Yes. I mean, he didn't have any communication with our community, which is one of the largest towns in his congressional district. He's too busy on Twitter. He doesn't communicate with us back home. And I that's some great advice, James. I know people pay a lot of money for that. So thank you.
I don't have to pay money for it. I am just a big believer that most every story comes off of the Bible. It's all there. Some of it's, I'll be the first to say, some of it's gets a little out there.
You're talking to a Sunday school teacher, so I understand.
I'm a pre-Vatican II altar boy. I could rip you off a good confetti if I had to.
I do love, Governor Beshear does a really good job of talking about, the golden rule and helping your neighbor, and that's how we should look at issues before we talk about being discriminatory or worrying about. So I he's someone that I really, have admired, and that's some, a really good advice, Jack.
We're into it, but study on Sunday school, pay attention to the Bible, man. There's a lot of golden shit in there, okay?
I will do that. And hey, by the way, y'all have fun with Lane Kiffin down there in Baton Rouge. We've been there, done that.
I think
you want to change the subject now, yeah. Chaz. I don't think that's going over well.
Let's put it that way.
He doesn't want to talk about the football or the basketball coach at LSU.
Yeah, well, Lane Kiffin can coach. You're right. The problem is when that Alabama job opens up, he'll leave you and not even remember how to even spell Baton Rouge.
You know, it's really funny. I was talking to somebody last night about Vanderbilt. Shit, they gotten good. They stayed in the SEC and Tulane got out. They just cashed a check and now they're starting to win freaking games.
Well, the NIL there is going to be the great equalizer, for schools like Vanderbilt. And I mean, Vanderbilt, we're in Nashville today right now. It's a great American city.
Is Middle Tennessee in your district?
Yes.
The state, the college?
MTSU, no. MTSU is actually in Murfreesboro. Okay. Yeah, Rhodes College is in the district.
Rhodes? Oh yeah, I love that place. I took my daughter. It looks like a Potemkin village. This place is too cute. Yep.
It's
James.
University.
I think the candidate's got all kinds of.
He's
got
to go.
We got to let him go. Jazz Mulder. If there's going to be a big wave this year, look for Chaz Mulder in 2027 in the House. We can't thank you enough. It's been a great conversation.
Y'all come to Nashville or Memphis soon, and we'll have you here.
Terrific. Come to Columbia. Shit.
Hey.
Even better.
Okay.
Take control of your health with Superpower. There are a lot of things that you can do proactively from this kind of exhaustive lab work that can give you life extension. I think it's very, very, very critical. And I'd never dream you had something this accessible and this affordable for ordinary people to do.
Well, nobody wants to see a doctor and leave more confused than ever. Men of action, it'll drive you crazy. We need data and a game plan. Enter Superpower. It's one simple blood draw with over 100 biomarkers, way more than what you usually get, and it unlocks a real understanding of your body for the years ahead. You'll be amazed at how much you find out. The app includes detailed information on your heart, liver, thyroid, hormones, metabolism, vitamin and mineral levels, and environmental toxins. That means you get insight on everything from disease prevention to brain fog or optimizing your workouts. Hands down, it's the most comprehensive and advanced system out there. Even with our busy schedules, Superpower makes it easy. They can send a licensed professional to your home, or you can visit a nearby lab. Afterwards, you'll have answers to questions like, is my diet healthy? Or am I sleeping well? Are my changes working? And more. Now that we can get their actionable health plan based on our results, we have nutritional guidance, lifestyle, and behavioral adjustments, and supplement or prescription suggestions, Bible directly from Superpower. You even get your true biological age. I think I want that you can track over time. Let's just say James and I enjoy discovering, we officially are a lot younger than we look. It's not a one-time snapshot. Each test builds on the last, so you can see progress year by year instead of starting from scratch. Plus, their on-demand clinician team answers questions so you know exactly what everything means without waiting for an appointment or relying on Google. So don't wait. Stop reacting and start proactively improving your health based on personalized data. Other testing services cost hundreds more for less information than Superpower's high-end concierge-level care. So make this the year you stop guessing about your health with Superpower for a limited time. Our listeners will get $20 off to unlock their new health intelligence. Head over to superpower.com and use the code WARROOM for $20 off your membership. That's code WARROOM. And after you sign up, they'll ask how you heard about Superpower. So do us a favor, if you could, and tell them Politics War Room sent you to support the show. The link also is in our show notes. Now for the outrage of the week, James. You know, I don't agree with many of Georgia Governor Brian Kemp's policies, but I really respect the Georgia Republican as an pretty honest conservative. He's not running this year, and the leading candidate, it seems, to win a June 16th Republican runoff is Burt Jones. Let me tell you a little bit about Burt Jones. Other than the R label, he is everything Kemp is not. He was not only an election denier and remains one to this day, he was a leader in the effort to steal the legitimate 2020 election outcome. The now infamous Rudy Giuliani, found guilty of lying and smearing Georgia election poll workers, said he was relying on information provided by Jones. Man, it is not easy to get to the dark side of Rudy Giuliani. The 2020 election was totally legitimate, as every research study, lawsuit, recount, analysis, even from Trump's own Homeland Security expert, shows. Joe Biden won. Trump was a loser. To claim otherwise is not just trafficking in a deranged conspiracy, it's outright lying. Georgia has weathered some terrible governors in the past. I'm old enough to remember Lester Maddox. But Jones, who Trump says is, quote, in my pocket, end quote, would disgrace a good state.
So the Burt Jones thing, you mentioned Rudy Giuliani. Before I get to the outrage, I want to signal somebody out. John Avalon, who I like a lot, is a kind of a friend of mine, I know his wife. He did a piece. I don't know if a politician that I know of has fallen further than Rudy Giuliani.
Right.
I mean, what that guy was at one time, he was a big fucking deal. All right. He's America's mayor. I don't know how much money he made giving corporate speeches and being a crime consultant in foreign countries and everything.
Front runner for the 2008 Republican nomination.
For 2008 is not just disgraced, but a comical figure in the worst kind of way. I know people have fallen from grace, and I know Nixon and you know, Dennis Hassert. But I don't know if the fall from grace has been any bigger, more monumental and ending the kind of thunderous crash that Rudy Giuliani did. And you just forget. And John did a good job of reminding you. So for my outrage, I want to go to the Texas Monthly, which is a very, very good kind of these publications, these statewide, you know, Washington City Magazine, you name it. And they chronicled with great detail and names of a man who is now in hell. He's been there since, I think, June of 2024. Unfortunately, he spent 96 years on this earth. It is one of the worst human beings that ever lived, a man named Paul Presser. Okay, so there are a lot of bad people. Why? He was intimate. I shouldn't say intimate, not any evidence in the sexual sense, with Mike Johnson. He was going to be they were going to do the Paul Presser College of Law, and Mike Johnson was going to be the dean. But what's relevant now is he's a known, sued, completely known pedophile. The chairman of the Harris County Republican Party was supplying him with young boys, and Ken Paxton still had him on an advisory committee very close to his campaign after all of this was known. It is all documented. And I don't know what, but I don't think pedophilia goes over well. And I don't think that pedophilia of young boys goes over well with one classification of people, and that would be mothers of boys, of which there are a lot of. Okay? And I just hope that this issue blows right up in his goddamn face of being pedophilia tolerant. And, you know, I go back to my favorite example in history. If Dennis Hassett would have been a Republican, he'd still be on Fox News tonight. He just would. But pedophilia is directly tied. Pedophilia acceptance goes right to the heart of who Ken Paxton is. Right to the heart. All right, you know, so he cheated on his wife. You don't give a shit. Okay, fine.
Twice he cheated on his wife.
So, you know. He is tolerant of pedophiles. You try to forgive that.
Yeah. Well, everybody ought to read that Texas Monthly piece.
It's, you know. The guy to report, I can't think of his name, but I mean, and he does what, you know, for a long time, you ran news bureaus and stuff. The big thing, you got to name names. You know, once you read something and says sources close to the White House say, it's okay, and it's probably true, but there's nothing beats a name, and this guy named the names.
Well, the Texas Monthly, Paul Pressley, everybody out there, get it.
Absolutely. Lose weight with HERS-WL. It's medically proven. It's anecdotally, it's observational. It's blind studies. You know, having a healthy weight is conducive to having a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah. You know, if you felt stuck trying to lose weight, join the club. But thanks to science and better understanding of the human body, there are more effective options out there than ever. Enter Weight Loss by HERS. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals, and HERS now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. Now, the results are incredible, and it's amazing and effective tool for you or the women in your life that you care about. With Wegovy at HERS, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss. That means no needles are needed. Everything is 100% online, and HERS connects you with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to the door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by HERS goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips, like recipes, meal plans, fitness, videos, sleep, content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, HERS makes it simple to find an approach that fits your need and your budget. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Are you ready to reach your goals? Visit for HERS.com/war room to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's FORHERS.com/war room. Again, for HERS.com/war room. Weight loss by HERS is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions. Visit for HERS.com, and the link is also in our show notes. Hey, our first question, and we love those questions from our terrific listeners, is from Philip in Birmingham, Alabama, picking up on something we discussed earlier. James, you mentioned party switching as a strategy for some southern states, including Alabama, to help pick up seats. Do you think it'd be wiser for those candidates to run as Democrats or to run as independents?
You know, I you do what you got to do to win. All right. And so in Sons of Angus King, who's been on the show, who's a friend of ours, is an identified independent who caucuses with Democrats. His voting record is frankly not a lot different between Maggie Hassan or Chris Murphy or anybody else. And this trend, and you're seeing it in Montana, you're seeing it in Nebraska, maybe it's even going to happen in Nevada. I don't think we should be doctrinaire about party labels. We should be more doctrinaire that people stand for the things that we do, pluralism, a rather vigorous safety net, and, smart regulation. That's basically at the core of it. And call yourself what you want. I don't care. I wish some of the people that some of these people, more lefties, do it. Some of them do. Be a Democratic socialist. That's fine. Don't be a Democrat. But we have a very low bar for entry, as we should.
Next, Glenn in Boston, Massachusetts. That probably is my favorite city in America. Said that I recently saw you predict the Democrats will take the Senate in the midterm. Do you think the Democrats will be taking back the House as well? The House is a done deal, Glenn. I mean, they will take back the House. The Senate is 50-50, I think. Seems like a bit of a cop-out. And every time I see a story on a Senate race in Ohio or a Senate race in Texas or a Senate race in Maine, the reporter will say, this race will determine control of the Senate. Well, no one race determines. But if I wanted to look at two, I'll give you the two M's, Michigan and Montana. Michigan, the Democrats have to hold their own. They've got two or three seats that could be a challenge, none more so than Michigan. And there is right now a left winger who is running ahead in the polls. I don't think he can win a general. So they have to somehow get their act together in the next two or three months. Montana, the Democrat who's going to win the June 2nd primary, cannot win a general election. No chance whatsoever. They just had two incredible heavyweights run in the last two Senate races, Steve Bullock and John Tester, and they both lost. An independent, however, named Seth Bodner, could win. So look to Michigan and Montana. If Democrats win both of those, done deal. They'll take back the Senate. If they don't, it may be a struggle.
So Yogi Berra said a lot of things. One of my favorite was, he is dead at the present time. Okay, at the present time, if we went next Tuesday, we would win the Senate. That's pretty clear. So you ask yourself, what's more likely to happen between now and November? Now it's kind of October because you start voting early. Is Trump, who is the dominant issue? Yes, Trump is the dominant issue. Is he more likely to be about as popular as he is today? Or is he more likely to be less popular or more popular? Of the three, that he becomes more popular is probably the instinctively you say is the one of the least chance. I really put our odds, I would put our odds to get 55 senators at 50-50 right now, at the present time. But I don't, I'm not very good at, telling you what's going to happen a month of, 3 months from now, 4 months from now. But boy, when I look at the recruiting, I look at the Alaska numbers that are coming in. I'm looking at different things I'm seeing around the country. I look what just happened in Texas. We could have an issue here in the Michigan primary. Somebody got to step in and straighten this shit out. I don't know. I can change my mind, but right now, calling me pretty optimistic.
Good. The next question comes from John in Sonoma, California. All right, James, he wants to put you on the spot. Right. Who do you recommend for California governor?
I'll get off the spot quickly. I don't know. I follow it like anybody else, but not close enough.
Right.
The I don't know. The guy that people really like, but they tell me he doesn't have a chance, is the mayor of San Jose.
Right.
But Becerra, I just don't know, and let's leave it at that. You got vote for who you think is best.
Yeah. It's going to come down, I guess, to Becerra or Tom Steyer.
That seems to be where it is, but
neither.
These elections have a way of surprising you in a crazy year like this, so you don't know.
Oh, I remember it must have been 30 years ago when the leading candidates were Jane Harman and what was the guy? Shrum represented this really rich guy, and they were running against each other, and they just slashed the hell out of one another, and third person slipped in, so and became governor. So it's always possible.
Yeah, it's going to be, there are going to be some things.
That was Gray Davis, yeah.
Yeah, Gray Davis. Yeah. I mean, I'll have this, the aptly named Gray Davis.
Right. It was Jane Harman against Al Checkey.
It was a Northwest Airlines guy.
They both had a zillion dollars, and they just attacked each other. And Gray Davis, people just said, hey, I'm going for the third guy. So maybe that San Jose guy can slip in, but only a week left.
I'm impressed with him, but no earthly idea.
James, this may be the favorite question I have ever gotten on this show. It comes from Jacqueline in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
All right.
And she says, looking back on Barney Frank's career, what lessons should Democrats take from him? Are there qualities in his style of politics or governing missing today? I knew Barney Frank since 1968. I actually knew him quite well. Spent a lot of time with him, did interviews with him at synagogues about his books, covered him on the Hill, knew him back in Boston. He was, I can think of anyone in the House who wasn't a speaker or a leader who was as important a figure as Barney Frank on two levels. First of all, the governing level. He was chairman of the banking committee. Here is this liberal from Massachusetts. He mastered the arcane financial instruments like derivatives. And Alan Greenspan would say he said he didn't prepare for anyone more carefully than he did for Barney Frank, because he was so smart and so good. The result was the Dodd-Frank bill. Politically, Barney had just these fabulous instincts. And he has a book coming out in September. And his advice really is to liberals, which is basically don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and don't adopt positions that the majority of voters find unacceptable. And the final thing I would say about him, he gives, I think, a great lesson to people, advocates of the trans issue, because those trans kids, or adults, I suppose, too, were being really brutally discriminated against. Barney says, look at what we did on gay rights. We didn't take up the toughest issue first, gay marriage. We took up anti-discrimination. We took up gays being able to teach schools. We took up gays in the military. And as we built support, we then finally took up gay marriage. And you know what? It then took off, and now it's overwhelmingly supported. And I think that's good advice that Barney gave for a whole host of candidates running this year and in the future. He was a wonder.
I think if I had to take my favorite moment of this podcast, we've been doing it shit. If I don't remember when we started, I mean, years ago, might have been we had Barney the last when he did, and his boyfriend was going across the back of the camera in his underwear.
Wasn't his boyfriend, it was his husband.
It was husband, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Then if the DNC wanted to do something smart, which I don't think you could ever do, I would name the Democratic National Committee headquarters the Barney Frank headquarters. That's how much I think of Barney Frank. And his last contribution when he was dying is, for God's sakes, Democrats, be smart, be clever, and win elections. And I everything you say, I completely agree with. I think if Ken Martin wanted to do something really, really smart, he would name it the Barney Frank Democratic National Committee headquarters. That's how much I think of Barney Frank.
He was something. He really, really was. Madeline in Greenville, North Carolina. James, wants to know, at what point do candidates speak up about all the corruption? Do you think that quiet patience until the November elections is enough to persuade Republican voters to flip their vote, or will it make voters think Democrats are in on the grift? Do they have to speak up more forcefully?
So you don't have any power. And I want to take a second to address this. So the Democrats are going to win the House. I think they're going to win the Senate. And what they should do, and I'm going to talk about this a lot, they should bring to the floor and vote on things that are over 70% popular that they will never sign. One of these would be ethics legislation. Public overwhelmingly supports that. Make them veto it. All right, you're not going to have the power to change disclosure laws or anything like that. But boy, it is a right field. And sometimes also, Albert, you got to play into it. So, you know, we talk about, well, what's more likely to happen? Does Trump get better or worse or stay the same? What's more likely to happen is that we're just getting warmed up on these corruption issues, or we've seen all we need to see. I think Proposition 1 is about 99.996% more likely. The corruption stories are going to be coming like crazy. And just wait until these books start coming out, particularly the Haberman Swan book. And as we unearth more, we're going to find more and more corruption, because it is what they are, who they're about. And we need to get ahead of this and get ahead of it now. It's not only the right thing to do, it's a stunningly effective political message.
And there's so much material. I would add just an addendum. I also want to make sure the Democrats are prepared for those investigations next year. They have to prioritize. They have to focus. And I'll tell you, I'm going to put a big plug in on a June 23rd primary in Lower Manhattan. Dan Goldman is, whatever else you think of Dan Goldman, he's actually a pretty darn good member. It's important he win that race, because he's one of the best interrogators and investigators in the House, and there will be a premium on that in 2027.
Yes. You know, the guy, I don't know him, who's kind of impressed me as Congressman, I think, Robert Garcia.
He's pretty good.
Maybe my favorite member of the entire Congress is Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. And let me tell you, when he gets a hold of this, they're going to have what Grant called a bulldog grip. But this is very fruitful, morally, ethically, and politically.
Yeah, it sure is. Our old friend John in Gurnee, Illinois. There's no place I'm more curious to see than Gurnee, Illinois, since we hear from John almost every week.
Yeah.
John usually asks fabulous questions. This is not one of John's stronger ones. He says, should Supreme Court justices and federal court judges be impeached for belonging to the Federalist Society? They failed to uphold their oath to the Constitution. John, the answer is no. You shouldn't be impeached for belonging to any group. And there are some good Federalist Society members, not many, but there's some, and some who've turned on Trump, like, you know, Michael Luttig, the great, great former judge. And I don't think impeachment is what you want to do. I think what you want to do is challenge the courts. You want to try to enact ethics laws that make them and disclosure laws. Consider the idea of adding to the court. But impeachment is not the way to go, John.
So, of course, I agree with you. And if grounds of impeachment is an organization involved, too, and that's trivializing the process. If you really want, I tell you what, one thing that happens regularly that is not commented on that I think would be the most impeachable thing in the world. So you have a judicial nominee, they go before the committee, and they said, not anymore, but they would say, Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. How do you view abortion? And said, I actually never thought about it. I'd have to see the brief. Come on, man. You're fucking 50 years old. You've been in politics all of your life, and you never thought about whether abortion should be legal or illegal? I mean, that's a bald-faced lie. We just sort of accept, I'm just an umpire. I'm just calling balls and strikes. I don't know. Tell me the case law on this again. I got to go to legislative sources. Oh, bullshit. They just sit there and lie like a rug, and we all accept it. And so if you're a third grader and you say, you know, thought process is not just developed, they lie under oath to all the American people, Congress and God and everybody, and we all say, well, it's a predictable answer. I mean, think about that. Just think about that for a second.
Yeah.
I'm 50 years old. I went to Yale Law School. I've been a clerk. I've been a district court judge. I've been an appellate court. By the way, I do not believe that the only people that could be on the Supreme Court are people who are former members of the federal judiciary. I think that's horse shit.
Nor do I think, yes. And I don't think they all have to have gone to, with one exception, You're Harvard right. or Yale Law School.
Right.
And they ought to have some politicians on that court.
Absolutely. I mean,
one of the great strengths of the fabulous 1954 Brown v. Board with had Earl Warren and a couple other politicians, and they knew what political dynamite this was, and that's why they worked so hard to get a 9-0. I mean, it really, you need some politicians on that court.
You're so right. And I think we'll have a Democratic president, and I hope they appoint a former governor or a really qualified, I don't care, anything other than somebody with 20 years of federal judicial experience.
Yeah.
I really think we've just lapsed into that. I thought one of the best ideas that Bill Clinton ever had was to put Mario Cuomo on the Supreme Court.
My great regret was that George Mitchell never went on. He would have been such a fabulous
Supreme Court. Absolutely.
James, our final question comes from Laura in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is a really good one, and we need to think about it. Why have most of the mainstream churches, she thinks, stayed in the shadows under Trump or too much in the shadows? With Christianity under attack from evangelicals and white nationalists, now would seem like the proper time for action. What do you think?
So, I'll tell you what I think. I can't believe that we talk about the world changing and we have all of the new things and things are coming online. Maybe the two voices that I pay the most attention to of anybody in the world is the British king of the British monarchy, which is historically never viewed as the epicenter of brilliance or ethics or anything else, in the Pope. Who would have ever thought that the British king and the Pope would be the two most inspirational people in the world? I can make an argument. I don't know if they're the two, but they're goddamn in the top five. And you're right, that mainstream Protestantism is just falling on kind of hard times. But I say this as a cradle Catholic. The ascendant religious institution in the world today is the Roman Catholic Church. It really is. And there's a piece in the New York Review of Books by a Yale historian, and the guy's last name starts with G, but Walter Isaacson said he's, because I texted Walter, and this story is so good and so deep, and a Latin American academic. God damn, he nailed this guy. I think this guy, Leo, I got to say, is just on track to be one of the great human beings that we've ever had. He is just the right person at the right time. He just is a marvelous communicator. He's a guy that grew up in Chicago. He's got really sharp elbows. And you're right, the mainstream Protestant denominations that losing the influence. They hadn't figured out how to come on their own, but the ascendant institution, religious institution, is the Roman Catholic Church. And I really believe that. This guy's inspirational.
Some of the great secondary attributes of Pope Leo is, A, he's a White Sox fan. I always respect people from Chicago who are White Sox fans. The Cubs are elitist fans. And secondly, he is a Villanova graduate, a great Augustinian. And it's more than a little striking that Villanova and Notre Dame are going to open the season, the men and women's basketball team, in Rome.
That's
correct. You can bet the Pope will be there.
By the way, his ancestry is New Orleans Creole.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, he's like the first. I mean, if Pope Leo would have lived in New Orleans in 1950, he would be under the Code Noir or something.
Well, he's been a great force.
He's a great, I love that guy.
He succeeded, I think, a terrific pope, and he is, he has kept that maybe elevated.
Who ever thought we would be papists on the show?
I know. Listen, we love those questions. We didn't get to yours this week. We'll get to it next week. So please keep sending them in. And John, I apologize for saying it wasn't one of your best questions, but boy, we look forward to your questions. And we're going to visit Gurnee, Illinois one of these days. Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Superpower and HERS WL, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them, because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. Now, James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel, or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.
What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest, Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.